So, when you go into an art museum, you're probably there to look at what's on the walls, to see what the paintings, photographs, and other artworks can teach you about a place and time, or even about yourself. That's one of the points of museums where, as the saying goes, every picture tells a story. But there's a different kind of story being told in museums in Louisville and in many other American cities. To see it, though, you'll have to look away from what's on the walls and towards the people working within them. I'm Ashley Stevens. This year, 89.3 WFPL News is taking a deep look at race, ethnicity, and culture in our community. For the next Louisville series, which is produced with support from the Community Foundation of Louisville, we're making a documentary or discussion on the radio and online once a month, all year long. They focus on how race and ethnicity affect who we are and how we live. This month, we decided to look at diversity in the upper echelons of Louisville's art museum management. Our story starts a few weeks ago. Julie Talent leads me through the hallways of DuPont Manual High School, past corkboards covered in pencil sketches and sprawling paintings stretched over top of the lockers. Talent has been teaching advanced placement art history at the Visual Arts Magnet for nearly 16 years. But there's one teaching memory from several years back that really stands out. She was in front of her AP art history class, and then...
When I taught the class maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I had a student just stand up and say, "Miss Talent, where are the brown people?" You know, and I said, "Well, not so much."
Eventually, with the help of Talent, who was on the steering committee for the AP College Board, the National Art History curriculum was redesigned to focus less on the traditionally accepted, though incredibly Eurocentric, canon. It now features 250 works from all across the globe. Talent flips through the textbook. There are sculptures from South America, vivid tapestries from Southeast Asia, and splashy contemporary European pieces.
It's interesting because with the new curriculum, we have fewer items and we're supposed to go deeper. So the prior class was a much more generally superficial. I don't mean that the class is superficial, but just because of time restraints, you couldn't really dig deep contextually. With the more limited curriculum, we can spend a little more time with the items.
As a result, Talent says students from all backgrounds can see people like them when they read through high school art history. But the art world's diversity problem goes far beyond textbooks. It's a very real problem that spans decades and venues. Elementary schools, high school art classrooms, colleges, and one of the most obvious places, museums, especially when it comes to their staff. According to a 2015 report by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, mid and upper level museum and curatorial positions are overwhelmingly white in the U.S. Non-Hispanic whites constitute 84% of near top-tier positions, while Asians represent 5%, Blacks 4%, and Hispanics 3%. And while the foundation acknowledges the 2015 demographic survey is discouraging, it provides baseline data against which future surveys can be measured and progress tracked. Like most museums across the country, Louisville visual arts institutions have a diversity problem. So you should probably know before we get too far into this, as you might expect, the majority of the art professionals to whom I spoke are white. But not everyone. Many of them say the lack of diversity is a cycle that needs to be broken. But what are local leaders doing to ensure that it is? Mellon Foundation Vice President Marriott Westerman says the numbers they found don't even come close to representing the diversity present in America today. But why? Well, there are a few reasons. But let's set the background with kind of an academic concept. The term white space. Yale sociologist Elijah Anderson coined it in his paper, The White Space. According to Anderson, since the end of the civil rights movement, large numbers of black people have made their way into settings previously occupied only by whites, though their reception has been mixed. But overwhelmingly white public spaces, places like neighborhoods, schools, and workplaces, still remain. And Anderson says blacks perceive such settings as the, quote, white space, which they often consider to be informally off-limits for people like them. He explained it in a 2013 speech at Flagler College.
Americans in general have a much more nuanced, more textured attitude toward race than anything we've seen before. And usually that attitude does not manifest in overtly hateful, exclusionary, or violent acts. Instead, it manifests in pervasive mindsets and stereotypes that all black people start from the inner city ghetto and are therefore stigmatized by their association with its supposed immorality, danger, crime, and poverty. Hence, in public, an anonymous black person is burdened with a negative presumption that he or she must disprove before being able to establish mutually trusting relationships with others.
This results in spaces where people of color are typically absent, not expected, or marginalized when present. Following the 2015 opening of the new Whitney Museum of American Art, First Lady Michelle Obama said arts institutions were white spaces at the building's dedication.
You see, there are so many kids in this country who look at places like museums and concert halls and other cultural centers, and they think to themselves, well, that's not a place for me, for someone who looks like me, for someone who comes from my neighborhood. In fact, I guarantee you that right now there are kids living less than a mile from here who would never in a million years dream that they would be welcome in this museum. And growing up on the south side of Chicago, I was one of those kids myself.
The American Association of Museums says just 9% of core museum visitors are people of color. Going back to those Mellon Foundation results on staff diversity percentages, the cause of the problem seems simple. Why would you work in a place where you have never felt welcome? But Chris Wrights, an assistant professor of critical and curatorial studies at U of L, says the problem is more complicated. There are many nuanced social factors that come into play: income, social class, access, and expectations. But he does see two main problems affecting the, quote, arts and staff diversity pipeline.
One is that young arts workers need to see themselves. They need to see people that they can identify with, either in positions producing the work or facilitating its production, or in some way running the organizations where that work is being shown.
Wright says the situation is sort of a catch-22. For a more diverse body of workers to pursue jobs in the upper echelons of museum leadership, they need to see people like them in those leadership positions. And they're not there. Looking at the upper-level leadership at Louisville Arts Museums, it's almost all white, from executive directors to curators. Ramona Lindsay is the director of education at the Kentucky Museum of Art and Craft. She's African-American.
One of my coworkers, when I told her we were interviewing, she said, "That's great they're interviewing you, because you're the only one in the city." And I was like, "What?" And I thought about it. She's right. I am the only one in the city.
And it's not just in the city. Ramona Lindsay is one of the only people of color who holds a high-leveled arts administration position in the state. The second point of breakdown starts much earlier. Schools need to introduce students to museums, but not just as a one-off cultural field trip. According to Wrights, it's about making sure students of all ages and backgrounds recognize the arts as a viable path to employment.
Well, lately, the push in the United States has been toward the STEM fields, and this can be great, but it can also be problematic. For example, if your natural affinities are for the arts, going into a STEM field may not work out. It may not lead to financial success, which is kind of the promise of this push. And it also probably won't lead to happiness, which is equally, if not more, important.
This holds particularly true for college students.
Especially those first-generation college students who are looking to leverage their education into a career, making sure that they see a path from the arts to work.
A note on first-generation college students. Recent studies have found students of color have the highest percentage of parents with a high school education or less, nearly 50%. Of students that identified themselves as Caucasian, only 28% were first-generation college students. In essence, the arts and staff diversity pipeline problem needs to be addressed at both ends, from assessing the way museums fill the very top positions to inspiring the youngest students. Locally, there are two people focusing on that. Guylain Dumier, the executive director at the Speed, slides a long spreadsheet across his desk. This spreadsheet has garnered national attention, including a write-up in the New York Times. It's Dumier's surprisingly simple solution for diversifying the Speed Museum's board. Candidates for board positions are listed to one side, while Dumier's board matrix categories line the top. These range from more concrete demographic considerations like age, ethnicity, and gender, to characteristics like creative thinker or access to neighborhood leaders and community.
Every category where there were less than three people was a category in red, meaning weakness for me. And then every year for governor and trustee, we select the weaknesses, we publish them. It's public, people know what we need for next year. And we could only nominate people who fill two or three of these weaknesses.
Currently, there are combined 66 Board of Trustees and Board of Governors members, though the museum has capacity for about 90. As of January 2016, there were four outstanding areas lacking diversity: Hispanic American, Native American, artist, and religious / spiritual leader, which Dumier is confident will be filled within the next election cycle. Especially since over the last 2 years, since Dumier has been in Louisville, he filled all other areas of board weakness. The Speed Museum's upper-level staff, like the national average, is predominantly white. But Dumier stresses the importance of a diverse board.
It's obvious for me that if an institution is not connected with its community, sooner or later that's an institution is going to be obsolete and therefore die. And I'm strong when I say that, but I mean it. If you really don't keep a pulse on the community and what is the evolution of that community. So therefore, he really went back. If you want to be meaningful for the community, if you want to do the right programming, therefore the staff need to be really ready for that. And if the staff doesn't have an example from the trustee, which are the leading corp of an institution, how do you want that to just work and so on? So if we start at the top with the trustee and the governor, he goes with the staff, and then he goes within the community, he's connected with the program and with the mission, then we're going somewhere.
The Speed Board helps make decisions regarding funding and programming. They're the ones at the tip-top of the museum chain who push the go button for initiatives to attract more diverse patrons, like free museum Sundays and purchasing art by artists of color. And, going back to Wright's first point, having them there is a way for potential future museum staffers of all backgrounds to see someone they recognize in leadership. While Dumier acknowledges the diversity at the Speed isn't perfect, it is a step in the right direction. So we've looked at Louisville progress at the top, but what about at the very beginning level with students? That's where Ramona Lindsay from the Kentucky Museum of Art and Craft, or KMAC, comes back in. We sat down to talk about her experiences as one of the only people of color working in upper-level arts administration in Kentucky, and her opinions on the importance of introducing more diverse youth to the arts. Ramona, we've talked a little bit before, but your background getting to your current position wasn't sort of that typical, I start off as an intern in a museum and then take the next position, the next position. Could you talk a little bit about your educational and work experience?
All right. It's been a very diverse work experience. I actually started in corporate America. I have a background in a degree in business administration from Florida A&M, and realized that corporate America wasn't the place for me. So I went back and received a master's in elementary education from Spalding University. So I taught as an elementary school teacher primarily in Auburn, Alabama for about 11 years. And I primarily taught fourth and fifth grade, non-traditional classroom. I was what they called a looping teacher, where I taught fourth grade group of students and then I followed those kids to fifth grade. So I would have a group of kids for 2 years. So I was always kind of trying to test new ways of reaching young people. And I always had a passion for art and would always try to figure out how I could incorporate the visual arts and the performing arts in my educational instruction. And then in 2010, we moved to Chicago, Illinois, and I continued teaching there, but unfortunately, after being there for a year, I was laid off. And I had just completed a project with my fourth grade students where we used visual arts, specifically art quilting, to discuss violence in Chicago. So after I became laid off from education, I decided to follow that art path and to help other teachers to merge the arts with education. And so when we moved back to Louisville and I was looking at different opportunities for me to use my skills in Louisville, the position became available at KMAC for me to be a museum educator, where I was actually teaching field trips and going out and doing arts residencies in the schools, working with teachers to connect visual arts with their curriculum. So from that, I moved into the director of education position.
How did art become such an important part of your life? Were you raised in an artistic family, or at what point in your life did you sort of develop a love for the visual and performing arts?
My mother was an elementary school teacher, and she taught in a parochial school system. I also attended a parochial school from first through eighth grade. And so in those days when I wanted something to do, when I was bored or I didn't want to go outside and play, she would always have this random stash of art materials in the house from her classroom. And so I would always play with those things and experiment with those things. And so for me, as a child who didn't like to play a lot outside, I preferred to be with myself and my imagination and creating. That was an outlet for me. So my both of my parents, my mother and my father, encouraged that in the household. So art became an outlet for me.
Do you ever feel alone in your position?
No, I don't feel alone in my position. And that may be just my mindset that I see people as people. But when I did receive this position last year, I've been in the position about a year, I did have several African-American artists tell me that they were very happy that I was in this role and that they felt that different perspectives would begin to be shown and seen in the museum. And after hearing that from my peers, I realized the importance of my position. But it doesn't make me feel alone because I do have the support of the community that's outside of the museum. And so I draw on that community support.
Absolutely. So what do you think the importance of diversifying our leaders in the arts is? What good does that do to a community or for a community?
I think it's very empowering because when you have someone that you feel comfortable approaching for guidance or mentorship, I think it makes it a little bit easier to know that you aren't alone. But I also think that connections are very important. One of the reasons that I believe that I was considered for the museum education position was because I had an advocate who knew the work of KMAC and knew my work with kids in the community and could help speak for me. And I think it's important for people to be able to network and have advocates that can help support them and strengthen them.
So what can museums do better, do you think, to, on kind of a ground level, reach a more diverse body of children so they come up through museums and understand the importance of, you know, being in that space? So there's that part of it. But then what also can museums do to diversify their hiring process? What do you think are some of the ways that they can move forward and be better in that department?
First, I think access to the arts, especially the visual arts, are important. We have lots of access to performing arts, to the dance and the theater. We are realizing that it's easier for a school to take or expose their students to the performing arts because for a certain amount of investment, their whole school can participate. But for that same investment, you might only have 30 or 40 kids participate in a visual arts experience because visual art is so individual. It's all about an individual connecting with materials and processes. And so it's important that kids are exposed to more than just the performing arts, but they're also exposed equally to the visual arts. And KMAC is trying to start that process with our sponsorship by Delta Dental that allows for free admission to the museum for a whole year, for every day of the year, for anyone who's interested in being exposed to visual arts, anyone who wants to be connected with art and creative practice, they can do that at KMAC Museum. And I think that's an important first step, because if you don't see it, if you don't experience it, you can't begin to dream of yourself in that role later in life. So I think that's the first step, is exposing young people to the arts. That's also one of our missions of taking the art beyond the walls of the museum, working with different communities to look for ways that we can use art to engage the community. KMAC will be helping to send an artist to the Smoketown Get Down, who can talk about the upcoming Wheelhouse project that is being developed or planned in the Smoketown community. So we have an artist, Ashley Cathy, who is going to actually work with the community. And Ashley is an African-American young artist, so there will be young people who will see an artist working in their community and engaging with the community through art, so they can see the power of art and then begin to imagine themselves in roles.
I know KMAC does a phenomenal job with regards to their hiring processes, but museums across the state, museums across the country that haven't taken that step towards becoming more diverse, what recommendations do you have for them? How would you advise switching up the hiring process to increase the diversity that's there?
I think that's something that I'm still growing with as a museum director of education. I think for me, some of the challenges have been when I put out those calls for hiring, I'm still receiving applications from primarily Caucasians who have been trained in arts or have background in art history, or museum curatorial roles. So I don't have the answer yet, but I believe with programs like CACAD and the work that U of L is doing and Indiana University Southeast, their programs, I think if we can get more people of color in those roles, then we'll have more diversity at this level in museums.
That's a great point, that it's kind of a pipeline that works from both ends. Right. So,
And I think that with JCPS having three schools now, our three magnets that have a focus on the visual arts, not just Manual, but Ballard and PRP, I think that can begin to help improve the pipeline of artists. And I think that young people have to see that if they are creatives and they are interested in visual arts, that there are other avenues besides just creating art and selling it at an art festival. That there are those graphic designers, there are those museum professionals, there are those curators, our gallery owners those are other valuable career paths. And I think it's going to take us as a society talking to kids more openly about various career paths that will help to strengthen that pipeline. We focus a lot on STEAM, but we really have to, when we're talking about STEAM, we really have to talk about arts and how the critical thinking, the problem solving, the persistence and perseverance that you develop through the arts, through the visual arts, are impactful to the science, the technology, and the engineering, and the math. And I think that we really forget that. We use that acronym, but I don't think we really focus on the power of the arts. And I think we need to do that more as we're working with young people.
A few days after we talked, Ramona sent me an email. It read, We need to develop action steps to begin breaking the cycle. I remember when I was in high school, the Lincoln Foundation started Project Build to introduce young African Americans to careers in business as a way of diversifying corporate America. Project Build was one reason I decided to major in business administration. She said KMAC is a partner in the Big Brothers Big Sisters School to Work Art Cohort Program, where local arts organizations meet monthly to mentor students from the academy at Shawnee. KMAC is the only visual art institution participating in the art cohort. She left off with this question. How can more visual art institutions partner with community organizations to develop such programs? This report is part of The Next Louisville, a year-long exploration of race, ethnicity, and culture. The Next Louisville is produced by 89.3 WFPL News in partnership with the Community Foundation of Louisville. For more information, visit wfpl.org and scroll down to Next Louisville. I'm Ashley Stevens. Thanks for listening.